Hey, welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Devin.
And I'm Drexel.
And today on the pod, we are actually going to start with our interview with our guest Neera Tanden. We talk extensively about Doug Jones's win in Alabama and the tweet from Donald Trump about Kirsten Gillibrand, which was disgusting. And then we're going to talk about the Dreamers and the Dream Act and how that relates to government spending shutdown. And obviously, Drexel, you're on the pod with us today.
I'm excited.
Hello. I know, I'm so happy to have you.
You're
always
so glad to be back.
Yes. So Sarah is still feeling under the weather. Her stomach bug has kind of kicked her ass.
Even though it'd be good to be on when you both are on at the same time.
I know. At some point, it will happen.
It will happen. We're going to make it happen. 2018, we're going to make it happen.
Goals for 2018.
Goals for 2018.
So Drexel, how are you feeling about Doug Jones's election? Or win in Alabama?
Yeah, if you follow me on Twitter or you are friends with me on Facebook, I mean, all I said was, oh my God.
Yeah.
I thought it was a really, I mean, my folks are from Birmingham, which was a huge chunk of the Alabama electorate and made a huge dent in what Roy Moore thought he was going to have, at least going into the election. And, you know, I thought it was just a really exciting turnout. We saw some really exciting numbers with the mayoral race that happened out of Birmingham as well earlier this year. So I think that was a precursor to what was potentially going to happen with this Senate race, at least in that particular area. So that was exciting to watch. And I think that, you know, here's the thing. Doug Jones is a little bit more left than your average Southern Democrat.
Right.
Even though Republicans are trying to paint him as a normal Southern Democrat who votes like a Republican, in this case, Doug Jones never campaigned like that.
Right.
So I don't know where they're getting this idea that he would be a sitting senator like that.
Yeah. I mean, he was very vocally pro-choice and, you know, refused to shy away from these quote unquote identity politics, which is, reminder, just politics, which I thought was a really great facet to his campaign. Is he didn't campaign like a Republican Democrat or Southern Democrat, which I thought was really, I don't know if brave is the right word, but, you know, stayed true to himself, which is awesome.
Yeah, I think that is another, you know, we like to talk, at least something that Democrats can take away from that is, yes, we do understand the politics of each region, but you don't have to be afraid that you can't run on the things that matter to the base, in this case, Black women.
Right.
And that you can go out there and campaign on the things that matter to the nation as a whole and not be afraid that somebody is going to use them, or the Republicans are going to use their machine against you. I think what happened with Roy Moore is that he had a machine behind him, but he didn't have as much of the Republican apparatus as he could have. Say Luther Strange would have had in this election.
Well, it's also interesting because there's been a lot of discussion about how Trump's endorsements thus far have really just fallen apart. You know, he endorsed Luther Strange and he lost the primary. He endorsed Roy Moore and he lost the general election. And then he also endorsed Ed Gillespie in Virginia and he lost. So Trump's sort of endorsement doesn't have the same power as a lot of other sitting presidents' endorsement can have.
I'm gonna say something that might shock the viewers slightly, or the listeners slightly. Viewers, no, I'm sorry. I'm used to having viewers. Yeah. Anyway, but is that the reason Luther Strange lost was not because of Donald Trump. Luther Strange lost because Republicans were the Steve Bannonites were against Luther Strange.
Right.
You know, Ed Gillespie changed his campaign to, so it's really Bannon losing.
Right.
Donald Trump losing to Steve Bannon. And then Donald Trump losing the battle, Steve Bannon losing the war at the end of the day. And you saw that with Ed Gillespie. You know, he changed his campaign to be a little bit more Bannon-esque a little bit more white supremacist-esque, and focusing on that, where Roy Moore was doing was using, you know, we're used to Republicans using fear tactics in their campaigns. Roy Moore certainly used that to his, or at least tried to use that to his advantage, and so did Ed Gillespie, which is the style of Steve Bannon. It's Donald Trump to an extent, but Steve Bannon to the umpteenth degree, you know,
right.
And to where Donald Trump was like, well, I'm going to go after Luther Strange because this is what the kind of the party wants. And like I said, had Luther Strange been the candidate, I don't know that we would have been in this situation, that Doug Jones would be the United States Senator from Alabama right now.
Excellent analysis. I'm just so happy that Doug Jones won.
Oh yeah. Oh, it's gonna. It's. Like I said. I mean, I said it. I posted. I said, you know, it's just gonna shake the shit out of Alabama politics.
Oh,
know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I think so.
I mean, if you're a fan of Alabama shakes, I mean, they should be. They should really. You know, Doug Jones. Doug Jones played Teach Me How to Dougie on the way out. He should have played Alabama shakes on the way out, and that would have been. That would have been equally as appropriate.
Chef's kiss. As most of you Hellions know, I go to therapy regularly, and I'm a huge proponent of therapy as self-care. So that's why I'm excited to talk about our sponsor this week, Talkspace. If you've ever thought about going to therapy, but found it too inconvenient or too expensive to make it to an office, you can give Talkspace a try. Talkspace is the online therapy company, and they make it easy to connect with a licensed therapist handpicked just for you. Using Talkspace, you can text, audio and video message your therapist as much as you want. Your Talkspace therapist can listen to you vent about work or family or the Trump administration, explore your relationships with the people around you, and help put you on the path to a happier life. To sign up or learn more, go to Talkspace.com/hellbent. And as a special offer for our Hellions, you can use coupon code HELLBENT to get $30 off your first month and show your support for this show. That's hellbent at Talkspace.com/hellbent. Talkspace, therapy for how we live today.
All right, Devin, let's get into some of your guys' listener feedback. I know you guys had a lot of things that your listeners had to say.
Yes. So our last Thursday episode, we talked about Al Franken and John Conyers stepping down, and we called it, you know, taking out the trash, basically. And a lot of people were really happy to hear our anger coming through, and just our general, you know, assertion that these men, whether they're Democrats or Republicans or they self-purported champions of women, like if you are a sexual abuser, a sexual harasser, a sexual assaulter, you have no place in our politics, period. I think a lot of people were really happy to hear that. And one of the pieces of feedback that made me smile was at Gorgophone said, quote, "Angry Devin made my day," which I just love because, yeah, usually I have a pretty like even keeled sort of tone on the podcast, but I was pissed, like just angry. So we got a lot of responses in that vein. And then just one quick update about Patreon. So we told you last week that Patreon was changing its fee schedule and was going to pass processing fees onto the patrons. And they, after huge feedback from creators and patrons alike, they've decided not to do that. They apologized. And this is great news. So your contributions will not be changed in the coming weeks. We are happy to report. I know a lot of you stopped your patronage our show in the last week or so, and I hope that the removal of these additional fees will entice you to come back. But, you know, whether or not that's true, no matter if you're a patron or not, or, you know, your support has meant and continues to mean the world to us. So thank you all for being Hellions and just making our lives more thoughtful and nuanced every day. I mean, this shit is bananas, like we talk about, and being able to tell you about it is the best thing that's happened to me in 2017, personally. Our guest today is Neera Tanden. She is the president and CEO for the Center for American Progress and the Center for American Progress Action Fund, where she focuses on how both organizations can fulfill their missions to expand opportunity for all Americans. Neera has also served in both the Obama and Clinton administrations, as well as in presidential campaigns. We are so lucky to have her today. So welcome, Neera.
It's great to be with you. Thanks for having
Of
me.
course. So I want to jump right in and ask you about Doug Jones's win last night in the Alabama special election for the open Senate seat. And it was a huge victory for Democrats. But in order for Jones to officially join the Senate, the election must be certified by McConnell, who has indicated that he wants to put off certifying the election and seating him until they come back in 2018. So why are they putting it off? Why would McConnell want to put it off?
Well, I mean, this is obviously because they have a tough time getting votes for their incredibly unpopular tax plan, a plan that raises taxes on the middle class and lowers it for people who need it the least, well, the wealthy and corporations. It's an, as I said, incredibly unpopular bill because despite all their efforts to lie about it, people like that actually understood that this bill like hurts average Americans. And so they only had 51 votes for the bill. And so, you know, they don't have a vote to spare. And, you know, they could theoretically lose one, but I think they're anxious about losing a Rubio or losing a Flake or possibly even losing a Collins.
Right.
And so they're trying to rush this bill through. And do it before Jones can be seated. And but as I hope people know, when Scott Brown was elected in a somewhat similar situation, it was a special election. It was a reverse. It was kind of a deeply blue state that a Republican won in. I mean, not Massachusetts is not as actually Democratic as Alabama is Republican, but it was a similar situation. Harry Reid waited for Doug Jones, I mean, waited for Scott Brown to be seated. No votes were taken until he came back and until he was allowed to vote. And, you know, and in other states, Democratic secretaries of state have sworn people in as soon as they're elected. Jason Kander did that. He did that for a Republican. He could have waited. He chose not to. I mean, I think what basically we have happening in instance after instance, whether it's not having a hearing on Judge Garland or trying to hold up this as long as possible, Republicans are trying to bend the rules as much as they can in order to just accomplish their goals. You know, it's like a will to power situation, and they've no, you know, no adherence to basically norms or structures or rules. And, you know, that's part of what we're fighting. We're fighting anti-democratic institutions that, you know, are basically bending the rules to try to accomplish their goals.
Right. So, can I ask you if you have a thought on why they are trying? You mentioned this is a very unpopular tax bill that raises taxes on the middle class. So, why are Republicans using this sort of rule bending to pass this particular piece of legislation? What's going on behind the scenes, do you think?
So I think Republicans have taken, you know, $1 billion, $2 billion
Right.
from interests like the Koch brothers, who have been, but not just the Koch brothers, like a wide array of the super wealthy have backed the Republican Party for this particular moment in time, where Republicans have unified control of the government so that they can finally get a return on their investment, which is tax cuts. You know, essentially, the Koch brothers have invested a lot of money in the Republican Party and have waited for payback, and this is the moment of payback.
Right.
They are getting essentially, you know, billions of dollars of back in tax cuts for the investment they've made. It is what makes everyone disgusted about politics, about government, and it is what we're fighting. The Trump administration itself has devised a healthcare plan that enriches the Trump administration. It's like Kat put out a report, at least $3 billion in savings to Donald Trump himself and his cabinet
Right.
from this tax plan. So I think that it's an unpopular bill. If they only cared about public or elections, you wouldn't even pass this bill because it's going to be an anchor around their neck. But I think their theory is that they won't raise any money from their traditional donor class if they don't pass this bill. And that's why they're rushing to do it. I do think Republicans have qualms about what they're about to do. And
Yeah.
that's why their goal is to communicate to everyone it's happening. There's nothing you can do. It's definitely, they're trying to suppress opposition. And they are basically trying to make sure their campaign coffers are full for a 2018 election.
Right. So how can people like fight back against this?
So there are wavering Republicans. Susan Collins if you listen to what you said about this bill and the promises that were made, she will not vote for this bill. Flake said he would, you know, he was relating this to DACA and other issues. Definitely taking a lot of pressure. Marco Rubio, no one's really asking Marco Rubio's opinion. He's sticking his head up and saying it's a terrible, you know, that he's not, it's not sufficiently doing enough for kids. Right. So John McCain, if he cares about process, how he can adhere to a bill, which basically they're rushing through to avoid seating Doug Jones. You know, this bill is violates what many Republicans have said. If they actually held to their word, they would oppose this bill. Now, I don't, you know, some of them, Susan Collins is coming up with every excuse in the book to vote yes for it. A lot of them want to vote yes for this. But at the end of the day, the, you know, as we saw in healthcare, people rising up can stop this bill. We are seeing an incredible amount of action in Maine. We're seeing rising action in Arizona. You know, we need more people to make calls. And I would make it to those swing state Republicans, but I'd also make it to, you know, if you live in California, there are a number of Republicans who have voted for this bill.
True.
For a bill they know will screw over California.
Right. Talking about, well, because I also know Jeff Flake very publicly donated $100 to Doug Jones' campaign in the interest of country above party. And so it seems odd that we're not hearing much from him about Doug Jones now being seated to take a vote on
exactly.
This.
But what's also, you know, he wrote today, he tweeted, you know, a picture of his check, and then he basically wrote, or he tweeted, like, you know, a mention of Doug Jones and then said decency.
Right.
And I have to say, this tax cut bill, if it passes, will be the most unpopular bill that's ever passed the Congress.
Right.
Because people understand that in today's world, the idea that we're going to grow the deficit to give massive tax cuts to the people who are doing the best in the economy and raise taxes on people who are struggling is something out of like a Dickens novel.
Yes.
It is insane. And, you know, it is exactly what makes people so angry. And yet, you know, so for Flake to talk about decency and then support a bill that basically is so upside down is a little bit beyond my comprehension. But, you know, this Doug Jones won. It was a massive upset. I think Republicans, there are Republicans trying to reevaluate. I think the reason why the Republicans are so anxious to push this bill fast is because they know the longer it stays out there, the more Republicans are going to have qualms about what they're actually doing to themselves in voting for this.
Yeah.
I will guarantee everyone, if this bill passes, you know, progressives have to hold these folks accountable day in and day out around this bill. But hopefully we won't get there because we can still mobilize against it.
Right. So speaking of mobilizing and the upset victory, so what were the main contributing factors to Jones's win last night, besides the fact that Roy Moore is a child molester?
I think there were a lot of great lessons that came out of Alabama that actually also, you know, you saw some of it in Virginia, so there are some really critical trend lines, but obviously it was much harder victory, a much more surprising victory in Alabama. I mean, obviously everyone knows that Alabama is one of the most Republican states in the nation. But you saw a great coalition. Obviously, the backbone of that coalition was African-American women and men, but African-American women voted at 97% for Doug Jones and really turned out. The African Americans were 30% of the electorate. They were expected to be in a high watermark, 26, 27%. I don't know if anyone saw the articles about apathetic and, you know, enthusiasm was very down and people weren't going to vote. And that was totally wrong.
Right.
African Americans voted at a very high level to basically, you know, I think, send a message about to the country, but also, you know, kind of restore decency in Alabama.
Yeah.
This is like a, you know, just Roy Moore is the, like, I mean, we have Donald Trump as president, but it's a close competition for the most disgusting, vile person to actually run for an office in my memory. And so, but I mean, you saw also young people turning out, not just young people, but like parents. You know, one of the things that I was most interested about was one of the largest swings for Doug Jones was amongst, you know, mothers, you know, women yeah. with children have voted at a huge rate for Doug Jones. You know, there were a lot more suburban women who moved from Republican to Democrat. So, you know, African-American turnout was definitely the backbone of it. Millennials were a critical component. But Doug Jones did make inroads amongst conservative-leaning independents and Republicans who I think are just disgusted by what Donald Trump has done and what Roy Moore meant for Alabama. And, you know, the fact that that Donald Trump's numbers were 48-48 in Alabama is a statement about where he is in the country.
Talking about that, you know, recently there's been a lot of discussion about sexual harassment, sexual abuse, sexual assault, mm-hmm. especially among elected officials. And Trump's accusers, women who accused him of sexually assaulting or harassing them before, have come forward again in the wake of Al Franken and John Conyers' resignations. And then Senator Kirsten Gillibrand called for Trump's resignation again over these allegations, and in turn was what appears to be sexually harassed by the president on Twitter. So I think I'm, which is a lot. I think what I'm asking is, How did we get here? Why is sexual harassment all of a sudden okay in our political climate? Or is it not that surprising? Is it always been there and it's now just coming out more?
I honestly think that there are a lot of things happening in the culture that are a response to Donald Trump's election, and in part, like, and specifically in response to the fact that he was elected after the Access Hollywood videotape happened. I do not think it is an accident that we had the Women's March. I do not think it's an accident that the new activists who are coming into politics, 86% of that is women. I think what we're seeing is, and I think this is that we're having the moment we're having, women are like, I'm not taking this anymore, that I thought I lived in a country where this behavior would be unacceptable, and it became acceptable. I mean, I think that we are seeing a dramatic change in politics in America, where a lot of women, particularly women who've gone to college, are shifting alliances and saying, you know, the Republican Party looks like it's against me. Not even neutral. It looks like it's against me when we turn a blind eye to Donald Trump. That's why that was important for the Democratic Party to take a strong stand on issues of sexual harassment and say that people who conduct it, but even people that we've loved and admired in other areas, should step down when they partake in it. You know, I mean, I think right. that's an important statement for the Democratic Party to make, because it is the right thing to do. But also, I mean, it also tells those women that we respect them. We believe in them. We believe them. So, I think that's a message that resonated in Alabama, and it's a message that resonates in Virginia, and it's a message for the whole country.
Yeah. So, I mean, because Donald Trump basically harassing a sitting senator on Twitter.
And it was disgusting.
It was disgusting.
The fact that he would talk about a woman in the opposing party, one of the leaders of the Democratic Party, and insinuate that she does anything untoward for campaign contributions is disgusting.
Yeah.
I mean, what I say about the Republican Party is they think there's a floor, but they're actually just in a falling safe.
Right.
There is no low for under which Donald Trump will go. He's just the worst thing. And I mean, he's just the most disgusting, vile politician, and he is their standard bearer, and the fact that he and the entire RNC supported Roy Moore, who's accused of child molestation, and sent in money to support him after they revoked their money.
Right,
they said he was bad, so they took their money back. Then they decide to go back in after they know what he's done. Like, they aren't saying the women are liars; they believed in them for like a week, and then sent the money back in. It's like, they are so disgusting and vile. Anyway, and it was like, you know, I know we've been like listening to stories about Trump voters who won't change their minds no matter what, and we listen to all these terrible stories, but that was what the beauty of Alabama was, which is that confronted with the horror of Roy Moore, a state that is basically 60-65% Republican, decide people did change parties. They did. A lot of Republicans stayed home, but a lot, you know, there were Republicans that crossed parties. There were people who voted Republican their whole life, right, who came out and decided to vote for Doug Jones because they were basically saying enough is enough. And right, that is the beginning. Hopefully this is the beginning of the end of the Trump regime.
Right. Do you think that Trump and this sort of extremes that we're at is the logical extreme, the logical end of the GOP, or is Trump an outlier?
I think Trump is the product of a narcissism in the GOP that says, you know, the government, like, we're going to make the government do nothing, even though the country has problems. I mean, I think Mitch McConnell had a strategy, which was to say no to everything. Mm-hmm. And it basically made so much of the country furious that they were willing to accept an intolerable level of change.
Right.
And so I think Mitch McConnell created the ground that, or sowed the seeds that created Donald Trump, whether he acknowledges that or not. And my hope is that the country, this will be an inflection point. You know, what I work towards and what I build towards is an inflection point in the country where we're repelled by the horror of Trump and we build a strong progressive majority in response to him. Yeah. You know, Doug Jones is a pretty moderate guy, but winning that seat in Alabama is a huge shift. Winning more progressive candidates winning elsewhere, you know, that will be a huge shift in the country. And that's what, you know, I hope we can build.
Yeah. So these strategies that we talked a little bit about, like African-American, mobilizing the African-American base, you know, all of these sort of things working in tandem. Is this a strategy that the Democrats can repeat in other elections moving forward?
Absolutely. I mean, it's my view that we have to do a range of things. We have to defend. I mean, our base, the base of the Democratic Party feels under assault because it is. African-Americans have been targeted, Latinos have been targeted, women have been targeted, and it is a core principle of the Democratic Party to protect those who are under assault, protect the civil rights of people who are under assault, protect the dignity of people who are under assault. But there is nothing that's in conflict to saying, you know, also we should care about people who've lost their jobs, whether they live in Detroit or Appalachia. You know, that should be a concern for us, too. And there's nothing in conflict there. Donald Trump is sowing the seeds of division. One thing I hope for progressives is that we don't fall into it. I get angry all the time at Trump supporters because I think to myself, how could you support this man who was willing to do this, to do these things and just assault just the notion that America is a place for people of color and immigrants and women and as well as men and as well as boys, many white men. And, and you know, I get angry, but I think like at the end of the day, what he wants is for us to hate each other.
Right.
You know, he wants a country in which it's one group against another and this group against that group. And, you know, we have to overcome to, you know, think through ideas that solve the country's problems for everybody. Not, you know, I mean, not for just the white working class, but for everybody.
Right.
And that's what, you know, I think is how we go forward.
So, yeah, switch gears a little bit. The DNC has a unity reform commission, and they just put out a report on primary and caucus reform. And what is the DNC hoping to do with this? What are they trying to reform?
Well, I was on the platform committee last year, and I can say, thank God I'm not on the URC, but but I think the theory of it is how to, they're trying to think through how to have it is a critical issue for the Democratic Party as to how it nominates the next presidential candidate. So that's what they're taking up. I think part of their mission was to address some of the challenges around caucuses. I'm a little disappointed they didn't do more on trying to increase participation by really preferencing primaries over caucuses. Mm-hmm. But there are important reforms around, you know, access to the vote and same day voting, et cetera, or having votes out longer for caucuses. Some of the most, you know, egregious elements of caucuses, which, you know, people feel like they can't really participate, you know, you can address, like you can have absentee voting and things like that. But So I think they made many steps, but, you know, I like anything, I don't think it's a perfect document.
Right, of course. And then lastly, very quickly, we like to ask our guests for a gratitude check. So what are you grateful for today?
I'm incredibly grateful for the people who got up and voted yesterday in Alabama. And I'm grateful for the activists. And the first time activists throughout this country who over this last year said this is not the country they recognize. People have never been involved in politics, making calls, going to town halls, voting, you know, speaking up in their town hall meetings. These are the people who looked at the abyss and said, I want to take my country back. And to each of those people, we all owe a debt of gratitude because they are bringing democracy back to our country at a time where, like, not, you know, I mean, I hate to say it, but we have a lot of autocratic impulses amongst our leaders, and democracy is the only thing that's going to check them. And it is the thing that I think will build a progressive majority for the future.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Well, thank you, Neera, so much for taking time out of your very busy schedule to talk to us. This was
thank
very
you
enlightening.
So much for having me. I love talking. Thank
yes.
you.
Okay, I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Working on the show, keeping up with the news, being a mom, having time to sleep, it gets to be a lot. And one thing that I've started using is RX Bar Kids. It is a delicious snack bar that comes conveniently in kids' sizes. It comes in three flavors: chocolate chip, apple cinnamon raisin, and berry blast. Personally, my favorite is chocolate chip, though my son really likes the apple cinnamon raisin. So we use it as breakfast on the go, and I'm not going to lie, my husband and his friends always grab a couple when they come home from runs. It's perfectly portioned and uses whole ingredients that you can actually pronounce. With egg whites, fruits, and nuts as the base, RX Bar Kids contain 7 grams of protein and have absolutely zero added sugar and no gluten, soy, dairy, or bad stuff. They are a delicious, clean, and convenient snack that kids, especially my kid, love. You can find it at Target stores, or for 25% off your first order, visit rxbar.com/hellbent and enter promo code hellbent at checkout. That's rxbar.com/hellbent and enter promo code hellbent at checkout for 25% off your first order.
Hey, Devin, so you had a really great interview today.
Yes, I actually talked to her yesterday. I talked to Neera yesterday, and we really got into talking about Doug Jones's. I mean, as you just heard, we obviously put the interview first because we talked about Doug Jones, and we thought that was sort of on the top of everyone's mind. You know, I enjoyed talking to her very much.
Yeah, I follow her on Twitter, so I'm really excited. She's got a lot to say, and it's a lot of fun to watch go down my Twitter feed. So I'm excited to listen to the interview in its entirety.
It's really great. So, Drexel, let's jump into what we're going to talk about mainly today, which is government spending bill, government shutdown, and how that all relates to DACA and Dreamers. I know yesterday we talked, I called you yesterday, we talked a little bit about this and sort of the optics of this. So can you tell us a little bit about what is going on?
So last week, Donald Trump signed a stopgap spending bill that prevented government shutdown until December 22nd. However, a long-term solution is needed, and the Democrats are insisting on tying the spending bill to issues such as relief aid packages, finding a long-term solution for DACA recipients. On March 6th of of next year, almost 1,000 people a day could begin to lose their protected status as their Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program permits expire 2 years later. So Donald Trump has kind of punted it over to Congress to figure out what to do with the nearly 700,000 Dreamers who are able to legally live and work in the U.S. under DACA.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this when he made this proclamation, and it's all horseshit. Because he talked about having a big heart and he was going to deal with this so sensitively. And then he just comes out and says, well, we're going to end the DACA program and it's up to Congress to figure out what to do.
And it's just, it's such a frustrating situation.
I was just going to say it's frustrating. I was having this conversation. We were having this conversation yesterday, but I know I talk about it, or we talked about it on the political beat a little bit a few weeks ago, which is it's also very frustrating for Democrats. Because it's very easy for Republicans to paint Democrats as anti-American when it comes to dealing with undocumented immigrants. And right. So it is a very frustrating situation to kind of watch unfold, because there's, at least to me, there's nothing more American than helping out people who are coming over here for a better life and right. don't know another way how to do that. So I personally think it's kind of anti-American, or the anti-American way, the way that Republicans kind of handle immigration. This is not the way that we this is not the way that our country was built. So if anybody is looking at immigration wrong, it's certainly the Republicans.
Well, yeah. And you've also said before, when we've talked, that, you know, if you came in with no understanding of our system, you didn't know what a Democrat or Republican was, it can be frustrating, because, you know, it looks like, oh, we're refusing to fund the government for 300 million people so that we can protect 700,000 dreamers. But it's just not that simple.
Right. And I think that's something that at least, you know, at least I know your listeners are very smart, and we have to be able to approach conversations with people who disagree with us in a way that they can understand. I won't say in layman's terms, because we don't want to come off as elitist, obviously. but in a way that we say, okay, why are people not understanding this? And I think I mentioned it to you over the phone, which was, yeah, if you are a Republican who is sitting in a really poor state like Alabama or Mississippi or Kentucky or Kansas, for that matter, they have no money thanks to Sam Brownback. Then you're gonna look at immigration through a jobs lens. You're gonna look at it through why are they taking our jobs? Well, and then you just kind of have to. Of course, we all know the whole adage: well, you're not gonna take that job, and if you are, then we're happy to drive you to those places to help you find those jobs to do that, because there are programs that will help you do that. But you're not gonna take that $5 an hour job that a company's gonna pay. This company's gonna pay for you. So it's got to be explained in a way that people kind of understand that piece of it. The other part of that is we do have to explain the humanitarian part of that, which is, you know, specifically for the Bible Belt, which is, how can you be a Christian and have such anti-humanitarian views?
Right.
And so people have to, and that's, I mean, you either have to be pretty straightforward with that with people, because we kind of dance around that topic. We kind of dance around specifically calling people out for their anti-humanitarian views because we're afraid of offending them as a Christian. But you cannot be against helping people and be a Christian at the same time, or be religious at any religion, really.
It's true.
At the same time. And so if you are spending your time worrying about if you're not thinking about why somebody would be fleeing their country, then you're not doing it right.
Exactly. And I do think that this sort of vein of economic anxiety, which is a term that we hear a lot, especially in relation to Trump voters, and that immigration is somehow an economic anxiety issue. I mean, it doesn't really track that way. It doesn't really hold water, especially when you're talking about Dreamers and DACA recipients, because we're not even talking about illegal immigration at this exact moment, but it's all being tied up in the same package. We're talking about kids who've been in the United States for most of their lives, if not, you know, that's the only home they've ever known. And while immigration is important and talking about undocumented immigrants is important, that's not even what we're talking about right now. And I think that gets lost in some of this, you know, partisan fighting over it.
It does. And it goes back to kind of, again, the way that Republicans look at American families and just families in general. You can't be pro-life and want to be kicking out kids who have been here forever,
right.
who might be put in some sort of danger because they are American, because they do not speak the language, the native language that you want to kick them back to.
Right.
And, and I know we're going to talk about some bills because I want to bring up the four bills that they've got floating around Congress right now. Same time, you've got a tax bill that benefits corporations that are hiring these people. So if you want to talk about economic anxiety, it's the corporations that are putting undue burden on families for who are not, giving them a living wage, who are hiring people at a wage that's a humanitarian crisis in itself, and paying these people pennies and not hiring an actual American worker. So that's causing the economic anxiety. And you've got voters, Republican voters, who are looking at the tax bill saying, well, yeah, we want to give corporations a tax cut. Well, no, you're only helping the same people. You're helping the people that have no interest in helping you.
Well, yeah. And all of these things are so tied together. You know, we talk about government spending and a DACA, fix and the tax bill. These are all very intertwined, and taking them piecemeal doesn't give you the whole picture. And it doesn't create a helpful conversation. So yeah, Drexel, you mentioned that there are four kind of bills floating around Congress right now. Can you tell us what they are?
Yeah. So you've got the RAC Act, the RAC Act, the Bridge Act, the Succeed Act, and the most popular, of course, is the Dream Act. The Dream Act being the only bill that's been introduced in both the House and the Senate, which the first version was a version of the Dream Act was introduced in 2010, but failed to garner enough support. You've got the Gang of Eight that's kind of working on their piece of it. You got Lindsey Graham introducing an updated version known as the Clean Dream Act in the Senate in July. And then Lucille Roy Bell Allard from California introduced the same version in the House on July 26th. So it's going to be really interesting. And I know that if you are a news junkie like me and you got alerts earlier today as we're recording, Paul Ryan is considering retiring after the 2018 midterms, which will put a new speaker into the House sooner rather than later if he decides to retire. Any of the bills in the House right now would be in flux. Because you don't know who the next speaker is going to be, where Paul Ryan might have been pushing things behind the scenes. If you get somebody crazy from the Freedom Caucus in there, like a Mark Meadows or somebody who could get enough support from Republicans who just want to throw their hands up and not want to take on that leadership role, we could be in a very different situation with any House bill that is tied to immigration. And it could be far worse for immigrants down the line.
That's true. I think what people also don't realize is that the Dream Act is fairly bipartisan, and it always has been. It's never really garnered enough support to pass. But so you said Senator Lindsey Graham, who's a Republican, I think, as we all know, he introduced the version in the Senate. And Lucille Roy Bell Allard is a Democrat from California.
Right.
And she's the one who introduced it in the House that same month. So, it is a more bipartisan issue than most people believe it to be. And we talk a lot about optics, on the show, and Drexel and I, we talk a lot about optics because, no one wants to kick kids out of the country. I don't think that's the goal. I think this goes back to wrapping this all up in this immigration package and not separating out some of these more complicated issues.
Right. And one of the things that I just want to remind people, especially if you're a Democrat, is Democrats aren't for illegal immigration. And Democrats don't do a very good job of explaining that piece of it. And making that known to people to where they get it. And that's always been a Democratic messaging problem. Democrats aren't for a lot of the shit that people think they're for. And they just don't know how to kind of come back and say, oh, hey, I'm actually not for that. And then the DNC doesn't know how to message that properly. So that's why you see a little bit of work, a bipartisan work, because they are more in line with if you look at border security, if you look at the way President Obama handled immigration, deporting people as he did, if you look at Democrats do have no problem increasing funding for border security. They just don't want the perception of this physical wall separating the rest of the world from us.
So Drexel, let's talk a little bit about how all of this is related to government spending and the sort of impending government shutdown that's looming on December 22nd. And it's funny because I was watching Rachel Maddow the other day, and she was talking about how normally in a normal news cycle, when there's an impending government shutdown, that's all anyone on cable news, network news, anything can talk about. There's this like shutdown watch, and they do charts and graphs and polls.
It's very West Wing of them, which was one of my favorite episodes. You know, the whole Jed Bartlett, Speaker Halfley situation. I mean, that was intense, and I always assumed that shutdowns happen just like that.
right. But you know, she also pointed out that's not happening right now.
No,
there are so many other things. We're talking about the tax bill. We're talking about the special election in Alabama, and it's almost like people don't know that there's a government shutdown coming.
I think that they do. I think that people. I mean, I could be completely wrong, or just could be funny. That people are trying to decide on whether or not a government shutdown is good for America or not. Like the idea that Donald Trump wouldn't have the government at his disposal, or at least a good chunk of it at his disposal, is like, should we be okay with that? Or, you know what I mean? People are still trying to grapple with that in their head to try to figure out what makes sense. But you know what? At the end of the day, what people have to remember is a government shutdown affects families, federal employees at the same time. So it's not something that Democrats want. It's certainly not something that Republicans want. And they just got to figure out how to do it. Republicans just need to realize that that they run the government. They own all three branches. They run all three branches of government, and they can't blame anyone but themselves. If they needed the votes, they certainly needed to whip their own caucus, and they could run the gamut without Democrats for 4 years if they really tried really hard. But you've got factions of the government, especially the Freedom Caucus, that are causing them issues. And I was just speaking of the tax bill. I was just reading something that said that Marco Rubio right now is no on that tax bill unless a tax credit for working poor is expanded, which is something that the Freedom Caucus is not interested in. And so so those little things that people like, there is, you know, with this CR, this continuing resolution, it's something that, you know, will continue to inch and get them to where they need to be. And they'll probably do one more, but at least to, you know, do that. But at the end of the day, Republicans don't want the perception that they're working with Democrats, but they're going to have to.
Right. Well, especially because spending bills need 60 votes. They are in the Senate. They are going to have to work with Democrats. And so if Democrats really hold the line on this, they have leverage.
Right.
And there are plenty of things that need to get through. They, you know, CHIP still isn't funded. Right. We're months out from that expiring. And, you know, they're taking health care away from kids. CHIP, literally the C is children. You know, and then this DACA thing. The Dreamer Act.
Yeah, it doesn't look like Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi are really interested. I won't say that they're not interested, but they certainly aren't going to go to the mat on immigration to shut down the government. And it goes back to what we said before, which was the perception that Democrats are choosing immigrants immigration over Americans. And so that's a hard perception too.
I think Nancy Pelosi is a little bit harder line on this, and she's really taking a stand. And the thing is, I always say, don't fuck with Nancy Pelosi.
Right.
She is a big reason why the ACA was passed back in 2010, because she went to her caucus and she said, you're going to vote for this, and I don't care if you like it or not, and you're going to tell the press you like it, and this is how it's going to go, and fuck off.
Right.
Fuck your feelings.
Right.
So, and she really did the same thing here, because for this stopgap spending bill, only 14 Democrats joined Republicans in voting for that in the House. Now, in the Senate, however, Chuck Schumer is not as hard line on this. He's not really willing to play hardball. I mean, his main concern right now, I think, are the re-election bids of 10 Democrats that are running in states that went for Donald Trump, who are up for re-election in 2018. So he has to deal with that and not losing more of them, you know, not losing any more seats. And so I think that he's a little more flexible in terms of this issue in particular.
Right. And I think that's a coin toss. That's a 50-50. That's a coin toss for Chuck Schumer going into 2018, because I think he has that New York mentality that if Democrats, you know, win back the House in 2018, and maybe a slim majority in the Senate or whatever, that Donald Trump, who only cares about accolades,
right,
do what he can to work with Democrats on immigration. Donald Trump was never, at least before he got wrapped up in Steve Bannon and Stephen Miller. Like, if Stephen Miller was out of the White House, the messaging out of the White House would probably sound a little tamer, in certain areas. And so I think Chuck Schumer is banking on the fact that I need to protect my people just long enough. And Donald Trump, he's hoping that Donald Trump will come around to supporting some more moderate proposals that the Democrats will put forth.
Dangling his own self-interest in front of him.
Exactly. And saying, hey, you could win re-election if you just pretend that you're working with the Democrats, all the while
right.
pulling the rug underneath him once the campaign comes around. But at the same time, you have a lot of other Democrats who are a little bit more hardline, like Luis Gutierrez from Illinois. The problem with Luis Gutierrez, though, is that he's not running for re-election.
Right.
And so his influence is not as strong as it was. I know that he might be looking at running for president at some point. At least that's the word on the street. But, you know, I think he's going to be spending his time in retirement working on Puerto Rico. I know that's what, because he's a Puerto Rican descendant. I know he's going to go down there once he retires to kind of refocus on rebuilding Puerto Rico. So,
right. Yeah. I do think that this split, though, is really interesting, because what Pelosi said about the DACA issue is she literally said, quote, "We will not leave here without a DACA fix," period. And then Chuck Schumer, you know, he's a little more waffly. He said, quote, "There was no disagreement that it should be done. The question was when, where, how, and why. And those discussions are continuing." So I think that's exactly what you said, Drexel, is that he's thinking maybe a little more long term. I don't know that I necessarily agree with his strategy on this, especially because I think that he should be working with Nancy Pelosi and that the Democrats in both houses, because we don't have majorities anywhere, need to have a little bit more of a codified message.
I think the other part of that is Nancy Pelosi is making a personal political calculation as well. She's a lot more toxic within the party and outside of the party than Chuck Schumer is. We know
right.
that ACA or healthcare, whether or not it's single payer, universal healthcare is a huge part of what progressive Democrats are looking for in terms of leadership, and with DACA. So if Nancy Pelosi took a less than hard line on DACA, that makes her even more vulnerable to people who don't think that she's making. Who already don't think that she's taken a hard enough stance on healthcare. And so she does need to take that. And Chuck Schumer can then take a good bit of the flack. Because the president's not attacking Chuck Schumer. You know what I mean? Like they don't Republicans some left wing Democrats don't attack Chuck Schumer like they attack Nancy Pelosi.
It's true. It's true. And then all of this, I think, to wrap up a little bit, it's frustrating to use these kids, to use Dreamers as a bargaining chip. I understand why they're doing it. I do. It's just frustrating. You know, I think that we, like you said, Drexel, we have to really think what it means to be, American and how we conduct ourselves and what we think of as anti-American or pro-American. And I agree with you. I think helping immigrants, I think immigration is a huge part of what makes us American. And I think that you know, we really need to get to a consensus here. And I think that the spending bill is a really great way to do it, because for a lot of things, the the Republicans don't need to work with Democrats, at least in the Senate. You know, they can do it with 50 or they can do it with 50 or 51 votes because they've got Mike Pence to break the tie. And so on something that needs 60 votes, like a spending bill, I mean, that's where Democrats have the leverage.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know what Mitch McConnell's calculations are going to be like and what Democrats that he's talking to. I know Joe Manchin said that he doesn't want to shut down. I'm sure Heidi Heitkamp is in the same is in the same boat. But that's not enough Democrats to get Mitch McConnell to the 60 votes that he's going to need.
Every day, millions of people go online to search for local businesses. Does your small business show up? When you create a website on WordPress.com, you make it easier for your customers to find you, to connect with you, and to hear how you can help them. Your business needs an online home. It needs a WordPress.com website. And what's great about WordPress.com is you don't need experience setting up a website. WordPress guides you through the entire process, start to finish. They help you take care of all the technical stuff and have amazing customer support 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So plans start at just $4 a month, and every plan comes with a custom domain name. As we've discussed before, I have lots of ideas for domain name. My personal favorite is Paul Ryan's spine is missing in action.com. So get started today with 15% off any new plan purchase. Go to wordpress.com/hellbent to create your website and find the plan that's right for you. That's wordpress.com/hellbent for 15% off your brand new website. wordpress.com/hellbent. Okay, Drexel. So that was a really great conversation. I always love having you on the show. You're such a fun guest.
Thank you. I always love being on the show and getting a chance to talk nerdy with you.
I know. It's so good. So let's get into our gratitude check. So Drexel, what are you grateful for today?
You know, I'm going to be really quick because I think it's something that I've already touched on, but I'm really grateful for the real Democratic base, which are Black women. And how Black women have remained steadfast to a party that I'm a part of, I know a lot of your listeners are a part of, and really propping it up. They showed out in 2016 for Hillary Clinton, not in numbers more than any other part of the electorate, as well as for Doug Jones in the 90s. Like 90% of the vote, and those are Barack Obama numbers, you know, on a smaller scale. But, you know, it really shows you who the Democrats need to be focused on going into 2018. The DNC put a lot of money, put about $1 million stealthily, didn't advertise it, put about $1 million into focusing on minority communities and millennials in the Doug Jones race. And you could see that. That, you know, Black women really carry the torch for Doug Jones, even though he personally didn't spend a lot of time courting the Black vote as much as he could have. And I know that's a criticism coming out of that. You also saw the election of a Black mayor-elect Bottoms out of Atlanta. So I do think that there is going to be a resurgence of Black women Democrats taking the lead over the next few years. I mean, we've already got Auntie Maxine doing that. And so we're definitely really, I'm just definitely really grateful that, you know, my mom was a strong Black woman and that Black women are really taking the leadership role in reshaping or shaping the Democratic Party.
Great gratitude check, as always. So actually, it's so funny, Drexel, because I am grateful for you today. I know, that's why I wanted to go second. No, I mean, I was yesterday when I was like doing last minute prep for my interview with Neera, you know, I called you and I was like, I need you to walk me through this DNC bullshit because I have no idea what's going on. And I mean, it's just so amazing to me that, this support network that, I mean, I talk about this all the time. This is like my gratitude check at least twice a month. But like the fact that I now have people that I can call when I have questions about this kind of stuff. And I feel like I could just pick up the phone and be like, hey, do you have a second to explain this to me? You know, our researcher Varsha you know, we're in constant contact with her and I'm always asking her questions and she's super smart. And, you know, I've made friends through this podcast. I've made connections with people way smarter than I am. And I mean, I think that for me, that's what I'm most grateful for. I mean, especially as we come to the end of year wrap up here, and we're getting to a point where, you know, we're going to take a hard look at 2017 and take a hard look at what's coming in 2018. I think what I'm just so grateful for is that I have connected with people that are so smart and so involved and who are so willing to help each other out, and create a base, a progressive base, with which we can all move forward. So that's what I'm grateful for today.
Well, I really appreciate that. And of course, I always appreciate you and Sarah connecting with me and give me the opportunity to kind of jump on whenever you need me so I can, yeah. You know, so I can spew my liberal elitism all over America.
I've been on your show a couple of times now, and I always say, so in my free time, I like to still comment on politics, but I like to do it on camera so I have an excuse to wear lipstick.
We try to do a little bit of teaching on the political beat. So
yes.
That is something that, you know, we enjoy. So definitely, you know, if you're listening, check those out. Check out the political yes. beat over on AfterBuzz TV because it's a lot of fun with me and Chelsea.
Okay, Drexel, so it's Thursday, which means we get to award the Hellion of the Week. And this is something I talked a little bit about with Neera, but I think we can get a little bit farther into her story. So, Drexel, who is the winner this week?
The winner, drum roll in your head, is Senator, the great senator from the state of New York, Kirsten Gillibrand, who definitely... Listen, I used to live in New York, and I actually got a chance to vote for Kirsten Gillibrand, and you know, she's been great for that state. She's been great for military families.
Yes.
I come from a military family, and that is something that I think that truly shows her bona fides as a person of interest. As we look to our leaders going forward, you know, she led that charge to get Al Franken to resign last week. She was the first one to come out. And she took a lot of flack from people within the party who could not understand why we would throw somebody under the bus like that.
Right.
And it does go back to some people might see it as elitism, but we do have to take that moral high ground because that is something that Republicans pretend to do and they don't actually do it. So Democrats certainly try to practice what they preach when it comes to that. And Kirsten Gillibrand certainly made that happen for Al Franken. And I'm sure he felt like he knew. And it
right.
just took a member of his own party, somebody highly respected like Kirsten Gillibrand, to say, hey, look, this is not the party. And we've got a lot of work to do, and we can't have you be a distraction to that work.
Well, and she's really been, you know, you said for military families, you know, she's been leading the charge against sexual assault in the military. And, you know, I think that she really adheres to the principle of like minimum basic standards of like, we don't want sexual harassers and abusers and assaulters among our ranks. We don't need you, get out. And that's really great. And she also, She called for Trump to resign because the women that accused him of sexual assault have come forward again in the wake of Franken and Conyers resigning. And so she, you know, after these women came forward, she called for the president to resign. And in response, President Trump, the sitting president, went on his Twitter and made a sexist, disgusting smear against her, a sitting senator, a respected sitting senator. And I'm not going to read it because it's really gross. And it just, she handled it with a lot of grace and dignity because what he basically said was, you know, she would do anything, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, for campaign donations.
Right.
And it was just a really gross thing to say about anyone, let alone a sitting senator from the sitting president of the United States, or, you know.
Not only a sitting senator, but a sitting senator from his state.
From his state.
From his state. And you're like, he probably voted for her.
Right?
And
oh, I know.
And,
oh, I know.
And that's a really, it's really crazy, the situation that he feels like he has to be in. And for him to say that, you know, I mean, the backlash from, I'm sure, from both sides of the aisle was swift. And, but of course it got lost in the whole Doug Jones situation. So, you know, because had this election not been this week, we'd still be talking about the tweet from Kirsten Gillibrand. I mean, the situation between them. So,
oh, absolutely. I mean, she quote tweeted him, but she said, quote, "You cannot silence me or the millions of women who have gotten off the sidelines to speak out about the unfitness and shame you have brought to the Oval Office." So, I mean, just like a badass, she was like, "You, I'm not going to shut up. I don't care what you say." And, you know, that was really courageous. She also she went on the Today Show and was asked about this. And she was asked if it was meant to be sort of a sexist kind of sexual harassment comment. And she said, yes, quote, "It was a sexist smear intended to silence me." And then she said, quote, "The president says whatever he wants, whenever he wants. I don't think that level of discourse, however, is what this country wants. I think what he has done is unacceptable. And if you put that in the context of multiple accusers who have accused him of sexual assault and sexual harassment that are credible, you need accountability. And I think that what people do want is accountability, and he should resign." So she didn't back down at all. And that is just such a badass hellion thing to do. Okay, Drexel, so last but not least, let's get into action items. So something that our listeners can do after they listen to the show. What do you have first?
Sure. So we spent a lot of time talking about DACA and undocumented immigrants. So definitely get out and call Congress, your congressperson, to pass the DREAM Act now. Because once we get around to March, things are going to go downhill from there for our friends and our family members, and our coworkers, and our fellow students and stuff like that. So, I think that's something that is really important, as a society that we do together. You know, today, you know, we really have to do a better push. Elections matter.
Wait, do elections have motherfucking consequences?
They do have consequences. So Republicans get to decide who's on the FCC. And if you've been watching today, I know as we were starting to film this, the FCC has voted to repeal net neutrality. So it's certainly going to be calling your congressperson about putting up legislation that will protect consumers from internet service providers. Washington State is now going to be doing that. The governor has already decided that Washington State will protect its consumers from internet service providers, and hopefully a lot of states will fall in line. I'm sure Governor Brown here in California, where Comcast and NBC and AT&T kind of have their headquarters, will follow suit in a couple of other blue states.
I want to give a shout out to Chip. While you're on the phone, you know, talking to your senators and representatives about the DREAM Act, talk about CHIP too. It's healthcare for children. It's been months since it's been passed, and we really need to get a handle on this. Friday, December 15th, tomorrow. Also, my birthday is tomorrow.
Happy early birthday.
I know, I'm going to be 30.
Uh-oh, 30.
I know. But tomorrow is the last day to enroll in the ACA. So go to healthcare.gov. Enroll, get your friends and family to enroll, anyone that needs to, anyone that you think might need to, get them to sign up now, because tomorrow is the last day. GetAmericaCovered.org is a great resource. And then we have an interesting one. There's been, in this wake of the Doug Jones win, as you mentioned, Drexel, and about how Black women came out in droves for Doug Jones. There have been, you know, a lot of people, you know, wanting to thank Black women, and a lot of people on Twitter, you know, saying basically like Black women have really they are the base of the Democratic Party, and we need to thank them. And Brittany Packnett wrote a great article for The Cut about what you can do that's not just tweeting. Like, you want to thank Black women, you want to support them, then support them. So donate to things like Collective PAC, which is a PAC that supports progressive Black women running for office. Support Black women candidates like Stacey Abrams, who's running for governor in Georgia. She's been on the show. She is fantastic. Pam Keith in Florida. You know, give to Woke Vote, which had a huge ground game in Alabama getting out the vote. And then, you know, do things like circulate and sign petitions like Restore Florida Voting Rights, and donate to Color of Change PAC. So we'll link to that article. It's a really great resource. And yeah, if we want to change the Democratic Party and we want to keep seeing wins like Doug Jones, we need to start supporting these candidates. We need to start supporting Black women in a real way. So I think that's something important that you can do today. So, Drexel, this was a great show. It was so fun to do.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun, as always, being on the show. So thank you again for inviting me.
Thank you all so much for listening, and we will see you back here on Monday.
For more information on today's episodes, including links to the articles we discussed and additional resources, you can visit us online at hellbentpodcast.com.
And you can follow us across social media platforms. We're at Hellbent Pod on Twitter and Instagram. We're Hellbent Podcast on Facebook. And if you want to join our Facebook group, we are facebook.com/groups/dickwadsbegone. You can also follow myself, Sarah Lerner, on Twitter at Sarah Lerner. And you can also follow Devin on Twitter at Devin Handy.
We also have a Patreon if you would like to support us that way.
Yes, and you can find us on patreon.com/hellbentpodcast, and your support would mean a lot.